May I reconvene us, please? Two or three items of logistics. First of all, a brief commercial for the Law Lab and the Law Lab's blog. The Law Lab's website will be rolling out fairly soon. The ever capable Caroline is in charge of helping us make that happen. So with the next few weeks, it's going to be, I think, a nice looking website, and it's going to have hopefully content as well as mere advertising. And as a result, one of the things we're eager to do is to populate it with content. We have a blog. We would invite any of you to think about being contributors in that context. It would be great to have you do that. Caroline is how should they go about doing that?
If you are interested in writing a blog, please send me that.
That would be great.
Oliver, can you give us just a maybe 2-minute snapshot of the Law Lab, its origins?
Sure.
Just to clarify what it is and where it's going and how long it's been doing it.
I've got my John and John to assist in this as well, which will be good. Now, it's always interesting to see, you know, how one describes which piece of the elephant. The origins go back to a bunch of interlocking work that we were doing, looking at both the research end and the application end around digital institutions in particular, really trying to see what does that look like when you migrate them into the digital world, which then overlapped with an interest from the Kauffman Foundation in really trying to figure out how would you design law to better support entrepreneurship and innovation. And in that context, not just the sort of classic concerns about, you know, is there too much regulation, too little, whatever it is, but really the more fundamental question of what does law do in this context in terms of providing assurance and protection? What could it do better? Where would more openness work? Where would less openness work? Where would more support work, less support work? And just also the kinds of economies you're talking about, driving down costs. But another piece of that, though, is also then opening up the terrain for new kinds of beasts. We sometimes talk about there being a Cambrian explosion that we're on the edge of in terms of the structures around which people do investment, do innovation, do entrepreneurship, all of those things. The kind of wiki company is one example of that. So our job we view is partly to do some of the research that will be interesting along that end. We've got John's research. We have Yochai Benkler, who's not here today, is doing a lot of research on a number of these kinds of questions of cooperation and what the web can and can't do to help in that context. Urs Gasser is interested in research on the dispute resolution and you know again working on some of those questions. We all the way to application things like the Vermont Digital Business Organization stuff we talked about this morning. So we're looking to catalyze. If other people in the room do it and that's great too. You know, we're not looking at ourselves as a proprietary place on any of these kinds of ideas. So we're looking to network. We're looking to do projects. We're looking to be active and 2 to 3 years from now be able to say, look how much this kind of field has developed and that we help play a role in making it go that far. John, you
Little difference, but part of it is the idea that if we can create a platform, a cloud platform, and sort of a network of networks with different partners, that you can sort of create a web services platform that you can link up with different areas of expertise to deliver and run experiments. We can do what we call experiments in the wild. In other words, this is what Yochai partly is involved with. So you can often do something like what they call Mechanical Turk out of Amazon to hire people to do things, and you can do and experiments with thousands of people at very low cost. And so you really... there's a whole new experimental opportunity. Plus, there's a high emphasis on interdisciplinary research. There's a lot of stuff that's being done in neuroscience, evolution, biology, psychology, anthropology. That we're learning more about human nature. So as you start to design institutions and how people cooperate and interact, what are the sort of the levers that you can click and design into a network? So how do you design a network to be self-recognized? This minder, so being trusted, transparent, and self-regulating? How do you design mechanisms that are not easily gamed? Did a lot of work in, actually part of an open standard now is being adopted on the internet on a identity standard, because that's very important. So you're trying to create a whole nother layer. We call it sort of cloud law layer on top of the cloud computing platform. So that's a particular my look at the elephant. And partnering with different, I mean, we'd be probably doing a lot more stuff with MIT in the Center of Future of Banking. How do you build a financial network that's actually much more robust and has rating systems that are not easily gamed, that kind of thing?
John, would you?
No, it sounds great to me. And the only added gloss I'd put on the top is, as I recall the original idea, it was meant to be kind of a network of people that has a loose base here, but connects to other projects like ones you guys have talked about. And I think we see it as being a one of a bunch of hubs in a broad network of people and ideas and innovation. So we want to be externally focused and open API focused, just as we are Center of Excellence focused.
And aiming to as I said, one of our aims is to try and make sure that we stay in touch, and that we I know many of you are already in touch. We're mining an existing network to some degree here, which is great, but we're also wanting to try and support it and figure out how to take some of this all to the next level. Carolyn, you have an insight. You see us all in operation. Anything you would add to that?
No, I think you've captured it quite well. I would think about the different tracks of research and how they're coming together around both the trusted network and then the idea of creating an experimental and observational platform whereby these kind of networks, tools, and people can come together and develop new tools.
And to add to this, you have a sort of open source software model, but also like an open services model. So people can mash up in a cloud and share services and virtualize a lot of stuff they're doing. And that might be that's sort of the next layer. So law could be seen as a software service in a cloud. And you can have four bars of law in Ghana.
But indeed, one of the things we're working on is relations and projections of some of these ideas of digital institutions and digital delivery of law into the developing world. Where again, it's not just that it's in many places the it's expensive. In some places, you know, the institutions just aren't there to support attempts to contract or finance or those kinds of things. So we're working on a project to think about what would be good you know, cell phone apps, digital device apps for helping support commerce in places where law isn't so readily available. So one of our targeted things is to try and get a little cell phone app that would be a kind of letter of credit or escrow app, where you could use your cell phone to set up sequestration of assets, the statement of what the release condition are, the trigger for that, who gets to pull the trigger, is it a third party, is it the two of them in together, you know, whatever the sign of that, the transfer of that asset to the designated recipient, which is essentially what an escrow is, essentially what a letter of credit is, and at least our intuition is that if that kind of thing were available via you know, some kind of simple digitized form, you know, then certain kinds of commerce that would be otherwise unavailable would become available, and people would use it in the same way that they use letters of credit to support commerce in legally ambiguous frameworks, you know, traditionally around the world. So anyway, we're aimed at everything from these kinds of little apps to, you know, the bigger things to try and get a really, really catalyze the use of digital platforms as a way of supporting commercial and other kinds of economic interaction. Does that answer questions reasonably? We're the happy recipient of a grant from the Kauffman Foundation, which provides us with the wherewithal to support what we're up to. It's a nice, if not endless, piece of support. other things. Oh, my Law Lab blog. Also, I wanted to thank. I want to thank many of you who've traveled some distance, and we're very, very grateful for your doing that. We're very grateful for the knowledge we've been shared. We're also grateful to the folks in house. I'm particularly grateful to Brock, who has been a great support and leader in many ways on many of these topics, and who has educated me and as well as providing support. The Caroline, others here at Berkman have been very, very good about making it all happen relatively seamlessly, understanding that academics need to eat and that rooms and all that work very well. So we're grateful, and also particularly to Richard, who around whose a visit we have used as an excuse to convene many others. But we're grateful. Now. Questions? We've got a 45 minutes before the wine and cheese arrives, and then the dinner. We've moved up to 6:30 for those who are able to join. It will be at Chez Henri, which is a nice steak frites. Yeah, it's a nice place. There we go. One of the questions is that, at least on my mind, is next steps. I know it's been very revealing to hear people say, we made the charge once. It didn't take as well as we would have liked it to have. As you can see, we're kind of trying to figure out how to make the charge again. At least in my own thinking, one of the kinds of next steps has been, can we get templates out there? Can we begin to make this something that people will coalesce around? Are there templates that people have been generating here that they would be willing to share? Is there an AALS hot topics a charge we try for New Orleans in January? What do we do? Yeah.
Can I make a general observation about the? There's a tendency to say we've tried that, but I actually think the world has moved on, and a lot of the work we were doing was frankly before its time, and it was looking quirky on the edge. And I do think the legal market's ready for this kind of thinking, and so I think it's time for law schools, whether it be a master's level, whatever level, to be taking it more seriously. If my work's any indication, I tend to write a book every 4 years. That this latest book I've written is just wildly outselling all of the others put together. Just far more interested in all of this, and in terms of the reviews and the way it's been accepted, there's just an open-mindedness that I think, it's serendipity to some extent, but I think it's a function of the market. That I think I said earlier that for about 20 years in a row, big law firms enjoyed approximately 10% increase in turnover every year, and the business was good. That's ending, and so there's an open-mindedness out there. People are far more inquiring, they're far more curious, and they'll be looking to thought leaders and to individuals and organizations who are well regarded to be pushing back the boundaries and to be making a whole range of suggestions, some of which will be outlandish and some of which will actually stick. But I wouldn't be at all deterred by the fact that it hasn't worked in the past. That's as good a reason for any of having another go, in my view.
Well, the rhetoric I use on my colleagues at Vermont has been, look at the New York Times. That 3 years ago, none of us would have believed that the New York Times is going to go out of business in 5 years. And I'm morally convinced the New York Times, at least in its current form, is going to go out of business. They're the Boston Globe. They're talking about shutting down, right? Because they 5 years ago it was impossible. Yes, of course the internet's going to do something. Now the Boston Globe's going to be gone. The New York Times will be gone. The big law firms will be gone. The law schools will be gone.
It's over.
unless
get your barrels and run them out.
Unless we can be the leaders on it, which is how I try to stampede.
So, write us a check.
Right? Anyway, so
we're in wild agreement about that. Okay.
But what would be tactically good? I mean, at least a portion of what I'm hoping to come up with. And we've got a sketch here of some stuff. Is can we present? People saying, this is a great idea, Oliver. It's a great idea, Richard, whoever it is. I understand. But what are we supposed to do about it, other than go get the barrel and go hide? And at least one of my thoughts is that if you offer them templates and things to say, by the way, it's only computing, it's not rocket science, and here is as a set of templates of things that you could consider doing, at least some might well pick that up and begin to get the thing going.
Templates for what?
Well, in this case, templates for aiming the template at the educational program rather than at the practitioner would be templates for what a course might look like, for what a couple of courses might look like, what a certificate program might look like, what a concentration might look like, what a degree program might look like. You know, a different kind of stages of what if you wanted to be proactive and try and meet this head on, what kind of thing you'd do.
There is a program you mentioned that I wasn't aware of it, that they have, or Harvard already has for the senior partners, the managing partners.
Yeah. And they look at strategy, but they don't look at this.
The exec ed.
I mean, and that's what the business school's done, I would think.
It's extremely new.
Okay.
So, was it quite new?
For years, have done something called the Program Instruction for Lawyers, which we got rid of a couple years ago. And then David Bulkins, very senior, really dynamic faculty member, created this thing called a program on the legal profession, and then in the last year or so has started by hiring a guy from the business school as professor of practice at Shish Nanda to run executive education through the law school. But if it happened maybe once last spring, and I'm participating in it this May 20th or something, but I think this may be the second time we're doing it. So this is really
very
really
embryonic.
I mean, superb marketing then, because it gets the sense it's always been there, which is, of course,
that's Harvard.
So how long does it last? Is it 2 weeks, 1 week, 1 month?
That's a really good question. I would guess it's on the order of a week, but
the old
I'm like the tree guy. I'm supposed to be May the 20th, from 1:15 to 2:30. What else happens? I'm not quite sure.
But again, in that context, John, it might be if you felt comfortable raising. By the way, we've got some additional pieces of this that we could put on the table for people if they wanted it.
And I think the visit of Mr. Jessica is perfect entree to that conversation too.
Well, I mean, it would be interesting to say, are we susceptible to what happened to the newspaper industry? I mean, are there certain parallels that would focus attention.
There is a single rule in the accreditation standards of law school that is all that is between the current model and 50% of the law schools going out of business. And that is the rule that limits the degree of distance learning.
You think it's that stark? 50%?
I think it's that stark. I think it's over 10 years. It's not over 1 year. But if you can, all of these things, these efficiencies that you talk about driving and the commoditization and all of that that you could drive into law practice, you can drive into legal education. Mm-hmm. Now, Harvard will still be around because the cachet aspects of Harvard will carry it through. Vermont Law School might not. You know, at least this is my argument.
Nimble will survive.
Nimble, so we're going to try and be nimble.
Some of us think that Nimble will survive, but we're a very quiet club. We selectively speak about our... But, you know, what about the AALS thing?
The AALS thing.
What about that? What about, I mean, an aptly named panel could attract a lot of people. An inaptly named panel will attract almost no one.
So we'll not make it on the hot topics.
Right.
Yeah,
but if we could shamelessly piggyback on things like end of lawyers, end of law schools, you know, that might...
I'm not sure how...
Apocalyptic.
Autobiographically, I'm not... right. The book called The End of Lawyers, it raises a lot of interest, I suppose, the title, but it also alienates, so you have to be careful.
Do you have regrets? Seriously, do you have regrets about the title, or are you on balance happy? You seem to be ambivalent.
Well, I am. The process, interestingly, I gave a first chapter of the book to 30 people and asked them what they thought of the title, and 27 said it was a great title, and 3 objected very strongly. The 3 were, one was the president of the Law Society in England, one was a judge, and the other was a senior civil servant, senior people. But more marketing business people said, if you want to sell books, it's a good title, and I think that remains the case, and I can't, I'm not, the figures are great. However, no matter how many books it sell, it won't reach to the... There's many hundreds of thousands of lawyers around the world it won't reach because the title's off-putting. And so, I don't know, if I had my time again, I might call it The Future of the Legal Profession or something like that.
Well,
I think he's right. I think that you could design something that was a little catchy, that was not quite so catchy.
It was not quite so apocalyptic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And interestingly, I met with the senior partner of probably the best firm in England the other day, and I saw an exchange of notes with the person who was introducing us over lunch, and he was quite insulting in a friendly way, and used the phrase apocalyptic. And then in between writing that and reading the book, he changed his mind. He said to me, I looked at the title and I knew of some of your previous work, and I just thought this is not for us, but now I realize it is. So superficially I think it was good, but I think I still may live to regret it. I'm not sure what form that regret will take, but
so if we did a double ALS hot topic, maybe okay. Not quite so apocalyptic.
Get Craig Christensen to do a case study of the legal industry, and then piggyback on that.
He's had an assistant who's tried to do that, incidentally.
Yeah. Is it? Well, yeah. I mean, that might be a nice case study to present, because that gets attention, and then what are the drivers and how do you adapt to that?
But again, talking to Professor Wilkins down, I keep on pointing downstairs because John said he's getting off his downstairs. Yeah. He's just doing a case study just now of Axiom, which is this highly disruptive provider.
I mean, you could call it. There's so many things you could say. You could say the disaggregation of the legal profession and its implications for law schools, or the disaggregation of the legal professions in a digital age and its implications for law schools. People would get it. You could say more. There's all kinds of stuff you could do at AALS. But I think hearing today as a lawyer who is not in this field, I think it would be great if you did that.
If your goal is to change something, then, and this is maybe my bias and my own personal bias, but I would look more at the people you're going to need to bring on board, and something like a panel is more of a means to an end rather than the end. And you want to think about whom are you trying to attract and who actually, what area are you trying to change here about? Is it law school or law practice? And then who would hold the keys to that, and how do you get them into the room, and how do you sustain that? I mean, you have multitudes of reports that have, from Recrate to the Carnegie, that may or may not have had any actual changes result from it. Whereas if you get people who are actually interested in moving forward and who have the ability and tools to make those changes, you're going to be more likely to be successful. So I think discussing the panel as a means to the end is definitely important. I just think the bigger question is who is going to be able to make those changes.
Deans and academic deans.
Yeah, not just the people who are at the sideshows at their various law schools to use.
Although it might be the case that it has to come from bottom up. I mean, if there are professors at each institution who can gather and kind of start demonstrating different experiments and some success here and some success there, and then there's a way to bubble that up to the deans to show that there's value.
My sense is that's been tried at AALS. We had that kind of bubble up attempt.
How long ago?
It must be 15... maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's another world. Again.
It's a long time.
It's another world.
That's true. Before the World Wide Web.
There was a panel, which I did not attend at AALS, on teaching regulation the first year. And, about three people from my law school went to it and came back kind of fired up. And, will it happen? When will it happen? Well, I don't know. You're just invested
in it.
It's
here.
It's true.
Yeah, I know. I know you do, yeah. And he was on the panel. I mean, that's...
I'm just parroting Martha Minow here. Who helped drive all this change?
Well, I suppose, just to throw out another thought, that so much of what Bertman does as a value beyond the community here is online. You could be a focal point for the legal profession who want to tap into what's actually being achieved. I don't know if it's a wiki, I don't know what it is, but one of the most impressive, my favorite website, in fact, full stop, is TED.com, which I think is great, where you can just dip in and see some great lectures. But I like that philosophy where you go there and you know those high quality speakers. I don't know if and I'm not sure if it's papers or speeches or a blog or whatever it is, but why not be somewhere we could do with an online focal point of great case studies and discussions of changes in the profession. And there might be, it could be an open discussion about the negative side of changes as well, but it would seem sensible to leverage Bertman's online
Grumpy lawyers sound off designed to support a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're, but part of it, I mean, just come back, if there are examples of new kinds of law firms, I mean, you mentioned the one that you met, actually, I can't remember the name, but I was at a CEO conference, there was a Yale, and there was a young group that started a whole new law firm, a different set of principles, global from the beginning,
right.
And I think there are things that are being done in Dubai, they're all, and in Singapore, and sort of rethinking law, that are going to be some new kinds of best practices that are not linked to the current traditions. And so if you really sort of a point in which people can learn about that, and on an ongoing basis and part of an educational program, executive education, that you get an update, you're kept current. That could and then pay for it. I didn't want to interject.
What does the B School do with its case studies and things like that? I mean, what's the online presence with?
So
I know they sell them. What's the online presence like?
The Business School Publishing Unit is a fabulous web.
Well, I just wonder when you mentioned the case studies thing, maybe there's something to learn from what the B School does.
And there may be a classic kind of or semi-classic kind of casebook text for some of this that we could come up with.
I keep on going on about it, but I think Dave Wilson's just about to publish a book of case studies of interesting legal businesses, and it's not about the future of the profession, but it's case studies of interesting, successful, or interesting business successes in the legal profession.
Excuse me, Ingrid. Lawyers like case studies. Does the empirical legal studies overlap at all with this? I mean, they're more focused on. But I'm curious if there's a subset of that that studies the legal profession.
We could ask Jason, and he edits their blog.
Jennifer Arlen was the editor of the SSRN one piece of that, and. Actually, her husband is a science writer for the Wall Street Journal, I think, and is somebody we'll be hitting on to at some point for this.
It's an opportunity to just do an inventory. I mean, sort of become a registry of record for people and projects that are of interest both on the academic and on the practice front, and to overlay some kind of organizational framework. So,
who
wants to go? I just want to find all the cool things that are happening in law schools in terms of teaching this cluster of topics. Here are the 70 people around the world who are doing it, and up to date.
We can do the crawlers and the RSSV, all that kind of. Give
sort of gather a place that's a unified presence.
So Colin, we should put a little buttonhole in some of this for the what we think of as a sublayer in the website, perhaps.
Yeah, that would be very valuable.
Yeah.
To find fellow travelers. I think that's still an issue. You don't know who did this course 5 years ago that is exactly what you want to teach in, and unless your paths cross, you miss that opportunity fertilization.
And property law has places to go like that. I mean, there is the property law teacher's blog that's got,
I'm not aware of any such place. I'm out of it, but maybe there really isn't.
Gene, you've been across some of this territory. Do you particularly with your Calius Association, is this something that Cali has My impression has been Cali has not been quite full square on some of these questions, but would it be an obvious place for at least overlap?
I mean, Cali would certainly be supportive. The Art Cullick thing is the most direct
connection here.
But in terms of substantive leading, I'm not sure that Cali is even in a position to push that. Doesn't quite have the same authority across the teaching field. If there are tools that could support it, then that's a different thing.
Gotcha. Questions on next steps, perhaps also in terms of training and training design and all of that. I think we felt that there was a market for some working with practitioners. I know, Richard, this is part of, at a very high level is what you do to make a living. But is there a set of specific tool training and that kind of thing? I mean, if one...
I, I obviously am only one person who only advise a very small number of firms, but almost every firm one speaks to needs some kind of help. So again, I keep on thinking of what kind of online services and support could you offer to the management team of a 200 partner firm. They're thinking about the future. They don't want to bring in big consultants, but they want some kind of accelerated learning. It seems to me that it's going to be difficult. Executive learning is going to go through a difficult period over the next couple of years of the recession, because it's an easy thing not to spend money on. Frankly, not to send your people to your top five partners to Harvard is quite an easy thing to do this year. We only postponed it for a year. But people still need this kind of insight. This is why, again, I've been wondering myself for ages how you would put together some kind of resource that people who run law firms could work with together. And it's an accelerated learning process, so they could gain insight into the issues, the possibilities, the successes, the threats, and so forth.
So again, perhaps a web presence might be a way to make some of that work as well.
But I could imagine maybe more in the lines of the business school who sell their case studies, that you could actually have a pack that you would set, that you would actually, with materials as well, that you would deliver.
There's also that, I mentioned this earlier, the lo bono movement, which turns, I mean, so this is basically looking at the quote unquote low end of the legal market, which a good chunk of law students end up in, and how to where the margins are pretty thin, and how technology is going to, it has been a big part of the conversation about how to make legal services more effective for lower income people. So a colleague of mine has an organization called Community Lawyers, Inc. There was that project that was called the Law School Consortium, which I think is defunct now.
Yeah.
So there are these kind of efforts on that side. Also, I forgot that, of course, the project that I'm working on with Cali could be helpful in that we're doing kind of a commons for people to share teaching resources. So obviously that's one place where if you're coming up with curricula or other kinds of resources where there could be a major exchange going on, it's intended to be open and accessible to all teaching professionals.
Good suggestion.
Sort of driven by people who ask.
What have we missed? Haven't we talked about that we need to talk about today? What have we missed? Marketplace,
I'm curious about funding for startups that might be, so along the lines of what you mentioned and what's going on in England, I've always found it really difficult to pitch, well, on the nonprofit side, pitch grants on the one hand to do anything about the legal profession. But then I'm also curious if there are private funders for more profitable ventures as well, or whether the legal market is seen as kind of some pariah of both the venture world as well as the philanthropy world.
Well, part of it has been the barriers to entry, which it has maintained at least at a direct investment in law firms, as you pointed out, you know, that if you can't, if law firms can only be owned by the lawyers who actually operate them, there are barriers to scaling and things like that. But there are also product companies that live making things available to lawyers. CCH kind of, what used to be the loose leaf providers and that kind of thing are presumably also facing the same kind of difficulties. Is there a movement among some of them to make some of these kinds of things available? You're making a living off of some of this, right?
And my mind was just somewhere else, and I'll come back to it when you get past this topic, but I wasn't.
Okay. You can reel it back in.
It was into the voluntarism and the pro bono requirement in law schools.
Okay.
And how any of this can be connected to that. So, for instance, the particular agenda is enlisting law students to build systems as part of their community contribution.
Now, Ron tried that and was getting no traction, I don't think, if I recall.
Right? Up.
Yes.
When?
He was doing the circuit and kind of trying to convince law schools' clinical programs to help build these things that now Brock is building, because they couldn't get the law schools to a lot of the things we were talking about. So an actual interface to help low-income people with divorce filings. You have to deconstruct the law, figure out how to present it to a client, go through all the logic, very, very educational, but just couldn't persuade. From what I understand,
right,
he couldn't really persuade.
It seemed like this perfect storm of educational value plus community service, but it was hard to keep going.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was that a while back or just recently?
About 2 years ago.
Okay. But I think it's an idea that has some legs, and it's another way to advance this agenda in general of exposing students of all stripes to possibilities.
What I'm doing with Vermont right now, and it's kind of interesting, incidentally came up because they see it as a stepping stone toward e-filing for the court system, which it's kind of a combination of motives. One of the Vermont Supreme Court justices is really pushing for automating, you know, as much of the court system as possible.
To answer your question on the venture side, I've had sometimes advising a venture firm, and the legal things that I've seen come across the table have generally not been something that attract a top-tier VC, except when all of a sudden they think that you can hack the entire market and have something that really scales very well. So like this is why I thought of the LiveOps model that earlier this morning.
Right.
You would have to, to get a top-tier venture fund, you need something that's got a market size in the hundreds of millions to billions of dollars. And if you really have a market clearing, best, most amazing, most scalable thing with great margins, you might get investment. The other thing I would say is, you know, money for early stage deals is nearly dried up at the moment. There's a lot of people following on to existing deals. So if there were a model that had some traction, that would, you know, potentially be possible, but it has to be just huge in terms of what the scale could be.
I mean, so it makes me wonder if instead a more like strategic partners, strategic investments are more viable, whether it be from Thompson or the other big guys there, or from the somewhat smaller, like much smaller groups, like I don't know, whatever the bigger corporate structure is around Nolo Press, or the various kind of disaggregated legal services that you're seeing start cropping up. Well, I'm curious about like whether they would be able, whether if we're talking about innovation in the marketplace, then where might there be interest in helping to fund
the
projects there?
Aside from having a big market, it's in people, right?
Yeah.
So team. So if you've got an amazing team of people with a huge idea that will have enormous return, then they will. But just talking about funding innovation in the marketplace, the answer is no.
Yeah.
So you get people like Polaris putting, $18 million into LegalZoom, which is this California-based direct-to-consumer model. I don't know how successful.
Oh, LegalZoom?
LegalZoom for a while was doing very, very well.
Yeah.
That's one of the two or three.
That sort of fit that perception.
Right. It's very interesting to watch. You mentioned Thompson. I don't know, maybe every 3 or 6 months you can get a hold of, because they put them on the web, their presentations to analysts, and so you get an idea of where they're going. And just increasingly, you see them creeping away from being legal publishers to being something quite different. And if you look at their competitors, Reed in the UK, LexisNexis in the UK have just announced that they're taking on head-on a company called PLC. PLC are very interesting in the UK. They're another law firm that's not a law firm. I haven't mentioned them, but they've got about 300 qualified lawyers who work with them, and basically they provide know-how services, updates, research. So many law firms in the UK will have what they're known as professional support lawyers, people who keep up to date with the law, who keep precedents, templates in order, who monitor developments in the law, provide training and education and so forth. And it's quite a big internal spend. And PLC say you can outsource that. You don't need to have that kind of resource yourself. They've actually just, over the last year or so, they're trying to break into the New York or the U.S. market, and they've opened in New York. But just within the last 4 weeks, Lexis has said they're moving into that area. Now, traditionally, they were primary legal sources. They were online services, commentaries by specialists and so forth. They're taking one big leap towards work that, frankly, is currently done within law firms. And so if you want, if you're looking at someone who's very, very, frankly, rich, it's people like Reed of their own VC unit that funds this kind of investment. So there's they're the biggest players in the space, really, I think.
Does the sort of proprietary model that they work give us a pause, or is that, you know, mm-hmm. do we take any pause from the fact that it's kind of a proprietary model, and or no? Okay, never mind. I just
a combination. We're a lab, right? If this is the law lab, I think a combination proprietary and open makes sense. Let's see what works. We have a bias toward open, but I think we can mess with proprietary from time to time.
I won't dispute that. I'm Carrie, you have I'm told that we are just about ready, actually, with wine and cheese in the kitchen. We can decamp in a moment or two. But before we do that again, I wanted to make sure that people had a chance to say the stuff that was on their mind that they hadn't had a chance to say.
I mean, as an outsider coming in here, it seems to me that there are two things that are mixed together here, and not properly in some cases. One is the future of the profession and what's going to happen and learning about it. Another is the use of technology. Obviously, there's a relationship between those, but in many places they're not the same. Right. And to the extent you're talking about undergraduate education, they're certainly distinguished from one, perhaps to some extent better distinguished. So as you move forward, I think you ought to think about which it is you're doing and promoting, and which goal you have in mind with which project.
Good point. And that there are certainly overlaps and subsets of the future of the profession, which is the technology end. But as you say, it's not the sole one by a long shot. I have just a couple of process questions. Did we accomplish things that we felt we wanted to accomplish? Did we accomplish what we needed to accomplish? I felt I did, but then I helped to design this, so I'm a happy man.
So the course has been approved for the Vermont Law School?
What is this?
When will it first be offered?
Yeah, the course will be first offered next spring. I will be in touch with many of you because I'm taking a little bit of a leap in the dark on this one, as you can tell. But looking forward to figuring out how to do it and how to do it well.
And how will you ensure that you have enough students who sign up? That's key.
I plan to circulate scare stories about the future of the legal profession. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how many I get. I think I will get a moderate amount. I already teach a class which typically gets 8 students, and they don't cancel it. So I'm a happy man. If I get 16, you know, it'll be great. Yes. Another piece of it is we're talking at Vermont about figuring out how to reposition legal writing a little bit. You know, legal writing, as you all know, is if you've been involved in legal education, the U.S. is kind of the weak sibling of legal academe. We already have a program that's a little stronger than many, and we're trying to say, what would that look like if you actually took it seriously and had advanced legal writing and not just a legal writing thing? And so this might tie into some of that as well. And if so, then I would get a different piece of clientele too. Again, rethinking and willing to accept what traditionally disfavored labels. So I don't know whether that'll be a good thing or a bad thing these times.
Mixed bag and
mixed bag.
Legal
exactly. But it is
take it head on.
But it is a natural spot for some of this to try and locate. So
innovators dilemma.
Now I know why you brought me down here.
Anyway, other final comments. Let's go have a little wine and cheese. Thank you so much. I appreciate it very much.